Marcia Shapiro, and we're on our second tape. And last week we discussed, and Mr. Shapiro brought up the fact that his father had memoirs, and I mentioned to Mr. Shapiro that we possibly today would discuss those. So I'm going to just leave this open to you, and you just discuss whatever are in these memoirs that you feel are pertinent to these tapes and relevant. And if I need to interrupt you at any given point, I will.
Oh, please do.
Okay.
the things, and I've just reread most of it. I couldn't reread all of it, but it's interesting to note the development of his desire to go to what was then Palestine. That even started while he was still living in Russia, where, as he records it, living in a small town, they did have some youth organizations, and it was primarily the Polet Sion, which gave him the background. Although they were not, in a sense, religious, his experience, as he relates it, of going to the cheder first were not pleasant. When the whole family moved to the United States, first to St. Louis and then to Denver, Colorado, that kind of interest kept on growing, and the associations that he had in particular, but also other members of his family, were such that knowledge of what was going on in the growth of Zionism they were aware of that knowledge. They had that knowledge. Although the chances of his becoming a physician, I suppose, were rather slim at first, he persisted in that and became a physician. And interestingly, he was really I would suppose you would say a total failure at private practice. That was not his bent. He keeps on referring to it, how he would try it, and then something else would come on, and he would take it on with glee or with happiness, and would forgo his attempts at private practice. I suppose any young physician starting out at that time had to build up slowly, but maybe he was also not only not cut out for that kind of medical practice, but he was also impatient, wouldn't just wait. That kind of development brought him in contact with people who then, when this it's rather complex, of course, you know, of all the ins and outs of getting it, and I don't know if I can give you the absolute true, you know, complete story, but he did, you know, let me see.
Since you're looking through the memoirs, and I'm not as concerned as if you were just talking on your own, I would hesitate to interrupt you, but since you are reading, there's a couple things I'd like to back up on. I did not get the name of the organization in Russia that brought...
Polet Sion, that's
P-O-A-L-I,
Sion is Zion.
Zion.
And it... Pauline means workers. It was the workers' Zionist organization.
P-O-L-I.
P-O,
P-O-A-L-I. And then Zion.
Z-I-L-I.
And there were factions in that. There was a left and there was a middle and I suppose there was a right too. Out of that came the Labor Party in Israel.
Okay. In Israel later?
Later. Yeah,
okay.
In Palestine.
And what are the dates that we're talking about here?
We're talking about, 1914 and 15. He was married in 16.
We're talking
1914-15, right. Well, before the United States got into the war. Because once the United States and he got into the war and I was just 6 months old, he became a contract physician in the U.S. Army and moved first to Fort Lawton, Oklahoma, and then to San Antonio.
Okay, I'm slightly confused. Your father already became interested in Russia,
in the Zionist
organization.
Right.
Now, what dates were those?
Oh, that goes back to the beginning of the century.
Okay, that's what I...
Right, 1903.
And then I'd like you to tell me why your father felt that there would be a slim chance that he would become a physician.
No, well, the family was living from hand to mouth, and the support for education was just not available. But he was supported by his family. As he said, his father did everything he could to support him. He had an older sister who had become a dentist already, so that there was history in the family of going on to higher education. But all the others became, the father was in business, also in Russia at first, and had a store, and then when they came to the States.
In St. Louis, and then? Did the father go on to Denver, or just your father?
No, the whole family.
The whole family went to Denver. Okay, thank you very much now. I appreciate that.
It would take too much.
Whatever you think is important, it is not too much for us.
Okay. The way he got involved in going to Palestine was through Dr. Dushkin, who he was impressed with my father's desire, as he calls it, burning desire to work in Palestine when he visited my father and my mother early in 1919 in Cleveland. And how, when he returned to New York, he told Ms. Zold about his ambition. And Ms. Zold, who had sent the first American Zionist medical unit to Palestine in 1918, so he, actually, when he went on the second one in 1919. In 1919, a second unit was planned. There was need for a health officer, and she thought of the man whom Dr. Dushkin had told her was with a burning desire to go to work for and in Palestine.
That was your father.
Right. And in the summer of 1919, he received a note from Ms. Zold asking whether he'd be interested in taking on the duties of a health officer with the American Zionist medical unit in Palestine. And he replied immediately, and by that time they had moved to Columbus, where my father was working with the state health department. And little details here, and that was the beginning of going to Palestine.
What city in Russia was your dad
from?
He
was born in a city called Balta, Balta, which is not far from Odessa. And he then went on to the gymnasium after the small town did not have sort of educational facilities. But when he went on, to the gymnasium in Odessa.
Could you give me a little bit more background about Dr. Dushkin?
Dr. Dushkin was an educator. Now, I don't have too much in here, but I know that he was lived in Chicago. He and his wife started a camp in, which I think is still functioning, in Maine called Modin, M-O-D-I-N. I'm not mistaken, I think that's the way it's spelled. But in his later life, when they moved to Palestine or to Israel, it was after the state was formed, he was professor of education at the Hebrew University and started a an experimental school and a program, education program, graduate education program at Hebrew University, which is still going.
And Camp Modin was for children or for adults?
Yeah, it's a summer camp.
A summer camp.
But with an Israel, with a Jewish educational foundation. It wasn't just merely a summer camp, but they had Jewish activities at this camp. And I think it's still going on. Still in existence.
Do you want to continue with your dad's memoirs, or do you want me to go on?
Anything you wish.
Well, whatever your preference is. I have quite a few questions.
Why don't you ask?
That are unfinished, and then maybe,
right.
Okay. First of all, I'd like you to give us a professional biographical sketch.
Of myself?
Of yourself, yes, please. And then possibly give us then, if you can, if not we'll go back to it, then your sabbaticals within that.
Okay. As I said the last time, I came to the States in 1934 with a same idea that most Palestinian Jews at the time had of going on to the land. So what do you study but agricultural engineering? And the University of Missouri is rather well set for something like that, and that's what I started out in. But I soon found out that it really was not my bent. So I switched. And in 1937, at the behest of the same Mr. Lieberman, whom I had gone to visit during the summer, by that time he was living in New Jersey, and he was a graduate of the Johns Hopkins University School of Engineering, and he sent me to meet with Dr. Ava Wollman, who had just taken over the professorship of sanitary engineering at Johns Hopkins. That was in 1937, and I was admitted to Johns Hopkins University to study sanitary engineering. And I stayed there for 4 years. The last year, however, I was a student at the Johns Hopkins School of Hygiene and Public Health. And in May, on May 5th, 1941, before graduation, I entered the U.S. Public Health Service and entered the as a civil service employee. The U.S. Public Health Service in 1941 was already beginning to gear up for what would be wartime activities. They had a 6-week training program at the National Institutes of Health, and I and about 20 others, nurses, physicians, engineers, became members of the second orientation course, as they called it. The first one had been 6 weeks before. And my career in the public health service lasted from that May 5th, 1941 through April of 1947. And my first assignment was to, first was in Portsmouth, Virginia, but that was for just a little field experience. But my first actual assignment was as a sanitarian at the at Liberty County, in Liberty County, Georgia, which is the county in which is now Fort Stewart is located. It's between Savannah and Brunswick, Georgia. And I was there till January of 43, when I was transferred to the Florida State Health Department. In other words, there was public health service employees, but assigned to various health departments. And that assignment was actually in Panama City, Florida, and I had responsibilities for, and my work was ranged between Tallahassee and Pensacola, Florida, and even into Alabama. I remained at that post, at which time I switched from civil service to the Commissioned Corps. First became a first lieutenant and then subsequently captain. You know that in wartime, the Public Health Service Commissioned Corps becomes part of the armed forces. You have the same armed forces officer, the same responsibilities and privileges. Anyway, that lasted until the assignment was to go overseas, and that was in the summer of 1944, and we actually sailed from Norfolk, Virginia in August of 1944, and arrived in Italy, and from Italy were flown to Egypt, where I served until December of 1944, until November, and then transferred from there to the UNRWA Yugoslav mission, the activities in Egypt were with UNRWA, at this Moses Wells, the Moses Wells refugee camp. And from there, it was to the UNRWA Yugoslav mission, where there were other engineers as well as myself. And in December of 1944, I was aboard the first, really the first food-carrying freighter that came into the port of Dubrovnik on the Dalmatian coast, and served in the southern and coastal area of Yugoslavia, Montenegro and Dalmatia, and then was moved to Belgrade, where the headquarters were, to the headquarters office of UNRWA, and served in Belgrade, and of course my work was all around, not only in Belgrade, but in Macedonia, and Serbia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, different areas, trying to determine what the requirements for repair to water supply systems, inaugurating a malaria control activity in Macedonia, for example, which was a highly malarious area. Population of about 1,800,000 population had malaria. It was a region known for its being malarious since Greek days, since Alexander the Great. Remained with the UNRWA Yugoslav mission through until really January 1st of 1947.
And then?
Then I came back to the United States. I was relinquished my commission in the Public Health Service in April 1947, and went out to California, where my wife's family lives, and then took on, in the summer of 1947, took on a position with what is called United Yugoslav Relief Fund of America. This is an interesting organization. It was started by Americans at the behest of the Queen Mother of Yugoslavia, who obviously was in exile at that time. And its primary function was, during the war, was sending Red Cross packages to Yugoslav, primarily, I suppose, Serbian, prisoners of war in Germany. And when the war ended and they had some funds left over, the question was, what were they going to do with it? And I don't know really how it came about, but anyway, there was a public health, an instructor at Yale University who became the director of this organization, a man by the name of Philip Melbach.
Philip?
Melbach, Melbach. He's no longer alive. And he, either he convinced them or they were convinced and hired him to evolve a public health relief activity. And he had been in Yugoslavia in 46 in this activity and met with me, so that when I left the Public Health Service, he asked me if I would join, and I was looking for a position anyway. I was going to go back to school, but I didn't know when. And so I took a job with him for about 6 or 8 months. And when I returned, I entered the University of California at Berkeley for graduate studies.
And what degree did you?
I received a Master of Engineering degree in June of 49. And as soon as that happened, I was employed by the American Public Health Association as an engineering research associate on a research project. And since it was countrywide, I was remained stationed in California. And in the midst of that activity in 1950, when I was giving a paper at the West Coast meeting of the American Public Health Association in Portland, Oregon, I it's a funny thing. He had sent me a letter. This was Dr. James Crabtree, who was at that time already the chairman of the Department of Public Health Practice at the Graduate School of Public Health here at the University of Pittsburgh, was giving the keynote speech in Portland to this meeting. And I received a note that he wanted to talk to me. And when I arrived to talk to him, he started talking as though I should know what he wanted to talk to me about, which I knew nothing about, because he had mailed me a letter but addressed it to San Francisco, thinking that there are other cities where you could have your office. I had my office in Brooklyn, and started extolling Pittsburgh and its renaissance. And we had driven through Pittsburgh in September of 1947 when we were going out to California. Came through here in a hot September afternoon. By the time we got out of Pittsburgh, we sort of looked at each other, my wife and myself, and said, "This is the last place on earth we're going to live." And, he started talking about telling me about Pittsburgh and about this new school of public health, which was admitting its first class in September of 1950. And asked me if I'd be interested in an academic position. That was the farthest thing from my mind. I always felt I'd be somewhere in the field. But despite our statement to the contrary notwithstanding, when I got back to Berkeley and talked to him, said, "Well, there's no harm really in looking at it, if I wanted to pay my way to come to Pittsburgh." A little interesting sidelight about Pittsburgh at the time, which I ought to tell you. My appointment was to come, and it must have been about October. I can't remember the date. And I was told in a telegram that I would have a room at the University Club. But 2 days before I arrived here, I received another telegram that said, "No, your room will be at the Webster Hall."
Guess why?
Guess why? Right.
They heard your name, so it wasn't anti-Semitic.
I guess that much, although there may have been something. But I doubt it. So that was one of my first introductions to Pittsburgh.
Coming to the University of
Pittsburgh. The problem with the University of Club remained until Mr. Jordan broke the line, not the Jewish line, but the color line. He came in 8, and Mr. Jordan was a councilman, black councilman in Pittsburgh. It was quite a to-do when he was brought there by a member to dinner, and they wouldn't let him in.
And when was that? Do you remember the year?
The Jordan thing. Still, we were living in England, so it was before 64. Must have been either at the end of the 50s or beginning of the 60s.
Interesting. And then you stayed?
And from then on, much to really, in terms of looking back at your life, to your surprise, you've been in one place. There was one chance of really, I never looked for anything to leave. But there was one chance of my leaving. There was one member of the faculty here in the beginning by the name of Paul Denson, who was a biostatistician. D-E-N-S-E-N. Paul had come here in the Department of Biostatistics with Dr. Chockel, who was the chairman of the department, and was here till late 50s. when he moved to New York as Deputy Commissioner of Health for research on health care, time of HIP and so on.
What was HIP?
Health Insurance Plan of New York, one of the first HMOs. Health Insurance Plans, still functioning. And research in healthcare and healthcare needs and healthcare provisions in the city. In 1966, when we returned from Israel from our sabbatical, all of a sudden I received an inquiry as to whether I'd be interested in the job of Deputy Commissioner of Health from New York City in charge of its sanitation program in the health department. Even though I had no desire to leave, I decided to look at it. And was offered the position. We discussed it, you know, up and down and sideways. Even though the Densons, who by that time were moving up to Cambridge, to Boston, to Harvard School of Public Health, and we could have had their house in Maplewood, New Jersey, just the notion of that kind of commuting and really being tied to the job day and night, because you have nighttime meetings.